It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Bernie Sanders had been warning Democrats all week that the turnout in Iowa wasn't as high as he had hoped, and his supporters here in New Hampshire took the hint. Democrats broke a record for turnout last night, but so did the Republican up for re-election.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the people of New Hampshire for a great victory tonight.
Bernie Sanders squeaked out a win on the Democratic side as President Trump raked in more votes than any incumbent president ever on the Republican side.
I got more votes than any incumbent president in many decades. That includes a lot of presidents, and it was really incredible, the love in New Hampshire.
Now Sanders, the national frontrunner, will try to keep it going in Nevada and South Carolina and on Super Tuesday, where Michael Bloomberg is waiting.
We don't need a revolution, we want evolution, and we need a nominee who can deliver it.
Today in Tennessee, an overflow crowd greeted Bloomberg, who prepares to enter the fold as Joe Biden struggles to hang in there, hoping more diverse states like Nevada and South Carolina help him finish better than fourth or fifth, like he did in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Look, I've said many times, you can't be the Democratic nominee and you can't win a general election as Democrat unless you have overwhelming support from black and brown voters.
Today, the Biden campaign said they didn't need to win the first two.
To do particularly well in New Hampshire.
Elizabeth Warren is trying to help her disappointed supporters, emailing them to take a walk around the block, eat an extra piece of chocolate, hug your pet, adopt a pet, watch videos of cats and dogs who are friends, call a friend, whatever works. And she gave a shout out to her Senate colleague.
I also want to congratulate my friend and colleague, Amy Klobuchar, for showing just how wrong the pundits can be when they count a woman out.
Most people think that Elizabeth Warren is probably just out of the picture. Whether she'll keep going or not, I don't know. Sandy Rios with you this morning. That was Peter Ducey's report on Fox, special report last night on Fox. And I just think it's these are things we should be watching. The next primary will be, I think the Nevada has caucuses, and then South Carolina has an actual primary. You heard Joe Biden talk about that's where he's hanging his hopes, because there are a lot of black voters in South Carolina. He thinks he will do much better with them. We'll see, won't we? This will be very, very interesting. Well, Peter had more things to say about the aftermath of the New Hampshire primary, and I thought we should hear. Let's listen.
Klobuchar believes last night's third-place finish was just the beginning now that the impeachment trial has ended.
I have beaten the odds more than that, and, you know, I'm not bolted to my Senate desk anymore.
Another Midwestern Democrat arguing they are on the way up. Runner-up, Pete Buttigieg.
I don't think most people would have thought this possible when we got into the race just over a year ago. But two states are two states, and we got to go on now and demonstrate a broad coalition.
Three candidates have dropped out since last night. Deval Patrick, Michael Bennett, and Andrew Yang, who was asked this morning about reports he may run for New York mayor.
We haven't ruled anything out at this point.
Now, Tulsi Gabbard is pledging to fold Yang's main campaign promise into her platform.
I'm going to continue to carry this torch of a universal basic income that will reinvigorate our middle class.
Promising $1,000 a month to every American wasn't the winning platform last night, though. This one was.
The wealthy and powerful will start paying their fair share of taxes. We will make public colleges and universities tuition-free and cancel all student debt.
When Bernie Sanders had a heart attack 4 months ago, we were traveling with him in Las Vegas, and nobody knew what hospital he was in or how that could affect his campaign schedule for days. But last night, the 78-year-old erased any doubts about his standing in the Democratic primary field.
Yeah, you know what? It's you think about what they are saying, what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and now Tulsi Gabbard is saying. Universal basic income So in other words, you just get money because, you know, you're an American, so you should get $1,000 a month. That's what they're talking about. Just think about that. Just getting money, just having it handed out, which is what we do, you know, with welfare, but it's supposed to be based on need when people need help, but not just people that need help. It's whoever, you know, the people in control think, you know, should be handed money. And what a great way to control the populace, don't you think? Great way, because who's going to bite the hand that feeds it? And then, of course, Bernie Sanders ending with we're going to abolish all student loans. Really? Who's going to pay for those student loans? Do you think it's, you know, the so-called rich? No, it's going to be the middle class. Taxes will have to go up. I mean, this is really radical thinking, and they make it sound, and so many people are in favor because they don't understand. It's like Margaret Thatcher said, everyone loves, the problem with socialism is that you run out of other people's money. Eventually, you run out of other people's money. And you just have to let that soak in. And I think as you grow up, you do let it soak in. And all there's an awful lot of old socialists like Bernie Sanders who don't seem to have learned that lesson. But hopefully our kids are smarter than that, and they will eventually figure that out. A couple of things. Elizabeth Warren now is out, in addition, calling for impeachment. I think the clip that I heard, I'm not clear if she's talking about the impeachment now, again, of President Trump, or the impeachment of his Attorney General, William Barr, because of all the things surrounding the grotesque, extreme sentencing of Roger Stone, who was an affiliate of President Trump. And he was charged in that Mueller hearing scope, the Mueller investigation scope. I want to talk about that in great detail, but the point I wanted to make right in a minute. But the point I wanted to make is that Elizabeth Warren is now mentioning impeachment. It's amazing what they say. And at Michael Bloomberg, I just saw this real interesting quote I thought you might like to know. Recent comments in a New York Times interview. He has started this gun control advocacy group. It's not the first one. He spent millions of his own dollars trying to stop, you know, to take away people's guns. It's a big thing for him. By the way, he's putting $50 million in this new effort, and it's called Every Town for Gun Safety. But here's what he says in the interview. I'm telling you, if there is a God, when I get to heaven, I'm not stopping to be interviewed. I'm heading straight in. I've earned my place in heaven. It's not even close. So that's Michael Bloomberg, who's throwing his hat in the ring. You'll be hearing a lot more because he's pledged to spend, I don't want to say it's billions of dollars for his campaign. He's spending $1 million a day right now in advertising. I do know that. So it's going to be very interesting, and we need to know about what's happening with that. I have a lot of different pieces of news I want to share with you today. Some of them are just interesting. They just are. I did not have a chance to talk about this event. Duval County, Florida was having an event to register voters for the Republican Party. And they had like a tent and a display. And some, you know, young guy who hates President Trump and Republicans drove into that, just headed his car toward that table and that display, and he wasn't able to kill anyone, but he would have. They jumped out to safety. He was a white male in his 20s or 30s. He's been identified by now, but this happened just in the last few days. And on the heels of that, I thought it was interesting. Someone sent me this morning. This is an account of a young woman who refers to that event and decided, as a registered Democrat and official leftist supporter of Pete Buttigieg, that she would go to a Trump rally. And so I want to read to you what she says. In fact, we'll put this on our Facebook page because I really think this is very interesting. I think you might want to share this. As she says, I've been a Democrat for 20 years. Here's what I experienced at Trump's rally in New Hampshire. And she talks about her past, how I was one of those Democrats who considered anyone who voted for Trump a racist. I thought they were horrible, yes, even deplorable. I had worked very hard to eliminate their voices from my spaces by unfriending or blocking people who spoke about their support of him, however minor their comments. I watched a lot of MSNBC, was convinced that everything he had done was horrible, that he hated anyone that wasn't a straight white man, and that he had no redeeming qualities. But when I witnessed the amount of hate coming from the left in this small niche knitting community, she was a knitter, And she got into a group that's very far to the left, knitting, and some of the things they did and said to people, how they canceled people, how they treated people. She said, I started to question everything. I started making a proactive effort to break my echo chamber by listening to voices I thought I would disagree with. And then she thought that they were filled with hate, but it turned out not to be the case. The more voices outside of the left I listened to, the more I realized that these were not bad people. They were not racist, Nazis, or white supremacists. And they could justify their opinions using arguments rather than shouting and ranting as I had seen coming from my side of the aisle. Then she discovered the walk-away movement, which you probably, we've talked about it briefly, but it's that whole movement about leaving the Democratic Party and also walking away from the left. She said, I started to question everything. And the biggest question of all was, did I hate Trump so much that I wanted to see my country fail just despite him and everyone who voted for him? And so then she makes this decision that she was going to go to this Trump rally in New Hampshire. The first reaction that I had was genuine fear for my safety. I have never seen people I didn't know so passionately urge me to avoid all of those people. One woman told me that these people were the lowest of the low. Another man told me that he had gone to one of his rallies in the past and had been the target of harassment by large muscle-bound men. And another woman offered me her pepper spray. And then, she said, I started hearing from people that I'd gotten to know who were right-leaning, and they were afraid of my safety. But they were afraid of people on the left violently attacking attendees. This was one day after a man had run through his car through a Republican voter registration tent in Florida, and there was genuine fear that there would be a repeat or that Antifa would bus people up from Boston for it. And so this is how she went. She said she was afraid, but she thought she had to go. So she goes. She waited over an hour and a half, which was 4 hours before Trump was set to take the stage. She got there. The line was stretched a mile. As I waited, I chatted with the folks around me, and contrary to all the fears I expressed, they were so nice. I was not harassed or intimidated and was never in fear of my safety, even for a moment. These were average, everyday people. They were veterans, school teachers, and small business owners, and they had come from all over the place for the thrill of attending this rally. They were upbeat and excited. In chatting, I even let it slip I was a Democrat, and the reaction was, good for you. Welcome. Once we got inside, the atmosphere was jubilant. It was more like attending a rock concert than a political rally. People were genuinely enjoying themselves. Some were even dancing to the music being played over the loudspeakers. It was so different from any other political event I had ever attended. Even Obama in 2008 didn't feel like this. She said, with Trump, there was a genuinely optimistic view of the future. With Democrats, it was doom and gloom. With Trump, there was a genuine feeling of pride of being an American. With the Democrats, they emphasized that the country was a racist place from top to bottom. And so then she goes on and talks about why it's not a cult, and how she heard criticism of President Trump in the crowd, things they didn't like about him, seeing things that he said. And she said, cults don't do that. She said, I left the rally walking by thousands of people who were watching it on a giant monitor because they couldn't get in, and I knew there was no way Trump was going to lose in November. And so this is just an interesting post, and since so many of you have friends and neighbors and family members and kids and grandkids that feel the way that Carolyn Borisenko felt, I think this might be useful. I've been a Democrat for 20 years. Here's what I experienced at Trump's rally in New Hampshire. Okay, so we will put that on our Facebook page. And several other things I want to share with you today. In the Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives today is expected to vote on Resolution House Joint Resolution 79. So it, basically, they want to expand the deadline for passing the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, remember that the deadline was 1983, but they want to extend it. Why are we against this? The ERA erases the differences between men and women. Abortion advocates are convinced that this will make abortion legal because of gender differences. I can't get into that right now, but it really will be a nightmare. It will take the code of law in our country and turn it on its end, because it will no longer be able to distinguish men from women, husbands from wives. We're on our way to doing that now, but the Equal Rights Amendment will thoroughly do it. It's what Phyllis Schlafly warned us about oh so many years ago. So if you want to do something about this, you need to call your congressman today and tell him to vote no on the Equal Rights Amendment. Go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, and you can find out how to contact them very quickly. afaaction.net, vote no on the Equal Rights Amendment. All right, that was quick, but I'll be back. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn is the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear her baby's heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for James McHenry, Director of the Executive Office for Immigration. Prior to working at the department, he worked in both ICE and the Department of Homeland Security. Psalm 121, verses 7 and 8, reminds us of God's plan for our nation. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for James McHenry as he helps our country in its continued growth. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
The Military Religious Freedom Foundation is a notorious group that's determined to eradicate Christianity from military bases. Founder Mikey Weinstein once bragged during the Obama administration he had a hotline to the Pentagon. The other day, a group of 15 airmen at Scott Air Force Base complained about an email inviting them to attend a national prayer breakfast event. The email was sent under the name of Colonel Jeremiah Heathman, the base commander. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation accused the colonel of establishing an official religion and breaching the bounds of the Constitution. In response, the military changed the wording on the invitation and removed the commander's name. Mr. Weinstein and his minions gushed with joy over the news, claiming yet another victory. A few months ago, they pressured the Army and Air Force Exchange Service to stop selling Jesus candy. You know, I think it's time for President Trump to disconnect Mikey Weinstein's hotline to the Pentagon. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Just another word about the Equal Rights Amendment, which the House is trying to change, which according to Andy McCarthy and other legal experts and the Justice Department, you cannot, once you, the House passes, attempts to pass an amendment to the Constitution, and they set a date on the ratification, so it has to be ratified by, I think it was 38 states, by, initially it was like, I think, 1979 or something, and then they changed it to 1983, and that was back in, you know, a long time ago. So now when Virginia had its changeover, a horrible changeover, to Ralph Northam and all the other leftists who now run that state, they, you know, in due course, right away, forthwith, shall we say, passed the Equal Rights Amendment, and that made them the 38th state. So quickly, the U.S. House of Representatives, in their typical lawless style, decided that, oh, okay, so now we can ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, even though the statute says, bypassed by this body, that it had to be passed by 1983. Oh, we'll just change it. We'll just kind of, you know, X that part out. But they can't do that. The Justice Department has told them that they can't do that. But, of course, they are going to try to do it today because they are a lawless body. And so it is the Equal Rights Amendment. Let me tell you what NARAL Pro-Choice said in their support of the Equal Rights Amendment. With its ratification, the ERA would reinforce the constitutional right to abortion by clarifying that the sexes have equal rights. Now, I want to interject my explanation to you. The ERA always pitched like it's equal rights for women. Poor, depressed, oppressed women will now have equal rights with men. It wasn't that at all. It was eliminating any distinctions between male and female in the law code, so that men and women there will be no distinction initially, eventually in pronouns, no distinction in law in terms of bearing children, anything, marriage rights, divorce, being or drafted into the military, which has been still a battle. It would erase all differences between men and women. And could I just say that women are equal to men? They always have been since they were created. This just different. So the Equal Rights Amendment is not about equality. It's about erasing differences between the sexes. But the NARAL Pro-Choice America claims, of course, it would clarify that the sexes have equal rights, which would require judges to strike down anti-abortion laws because they violate both the constitutional right to privacy and sexual equality. There already is sexual equality, could I say again? But there are differences between the sexes, and that's part of what's driving this. Phyllis Schlafly understood that. She was a mentor to me on this and to thousands and thousands of others. And so now they want to bring it back up again, and we want to stop it. We want to stop it. And so if you'd like to help, you need to contact your congressperson today and tell them to vote no on the Equal Rights Amendment resolution. So, and you can also do that by going to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, and they'll make it easier for you to contact your congressperson. So I hope you'll do that. I really do. I hope you'll take a minute to do that. All right, the big story that I want to get to is the story of, the president now needs to be impeached again because he's done this terrible, awful, no good, horrible thing, and that is interject himself by Twitter into the sentencing of Roger Stone. You may remember that Roger Stone is kind of a quirky character. He's a D.C. personality. I'm sure he's not a Sunday school teacher. I'm quite certain of that, actually. And he was a friend to Donald Trump for many years, just one of probably his many friends. And then he sort of had a role in the campaign, but I don't know. I really don't know if it was ever truly official. But when the Mueller team could not find anything against Donald Trump, they did their best to, they did a very broad sweep with Paul Manafort, with Michael Flynn. They did it their best to make it sound as though their investigation was actually legitimate. So they really arrested Roger Stone in the dead of morning. In fact, I'll remind you of that. We'll go back in this time, and this is a CNN report from January 2019. Let's listen. Clip 12.
This is exclusive CNN video. This is what happened this morning before sunrise, just before 6 a.m., when Roger Stone, longtime Trump associate and advisor, was taken into custody by the FBI. There's a moment of audio on here that I want to play for everyone, because this is what the first sounds that Roger Stone woke up to this morning was the FBI pounding on his door and shouting this. I want to just play this for a moment.
FBI, open the door.
Joining us now is CNN producer David Shortell. He was on the scene when this happened in Fort Lauderdale. Tell us everything that transpired this morning.
Allison, an extraordinary morning. We were here at 5 a.m. waiting for whatever was going to happen. It was dark, 6 a.m., just after the hour. About a half dozen police vehicles with sirens, but no sound. Silent sirens pull in front of this Fort Lauderdale home where Roger Stone was presumably asleep. The lights were off in the house. About a dozen officers, FBI agents wearing tactical vests and with large weapons, fanned out across his front lawn. One went up to the house and rapped on the door, shined a flashlight inside, said, "FBI, open the door." Moments later, as you heard in the video, it said FBI warrant. That's what the agent said. We then saw a light go on the second floor, and moments later, there was Roger Stone in the doorway. That was our video exclusively you saw shot by Gil De La Rosa, an extraordinary arrest here in Fort Lauderdale this morning.
Yeah, extraordinary. It was very extraordinary that CNN knew to be there. And so I wonder how they knew. And also extraordinary that Roger Stone, for all of his flamboyance, has never been arrested. He has no criminal record. He's 67 years old. He's not an offender, and certainly nonviolent if the offense is true. And yet they treated him that way, just like they treated Paul Manafort. In the dead of morning, the darkness of night still gets them out of bed, starts raiding their home with weapons when the offense was not violent. These are not drug lords. These are not, you know, mafia leaders. And so, you know, the point was taken. I think the Mueller team had a purpose. They certainly did have a purpose. They couldn't get Donald Trump, and so they went after these guys. And let's talk about this Roger Stone thing. We just learned then. All right, so the bottom line is the prosecutors on this case recommended that Roger Stone be sentenced to 9 years, or up to 9 years of prison. 9 years. And so the Justice Department, remember the Justice Department is probably, well, I don't know, 1,000 at least employees, maybe thousands. And of course, the FBI is under the Justice Department, but in that one building, and probably there's like 1,000 people. So most of them, fair to say, are either long-term bureaucrats or appointees by the left, because they've been very diligent about that. I remember Barack Obama and talking with Christian Anderson a number of times about the horrible appointments he made and how he made them permanent employees, not just political temporary employees. So Bill Barr probably has maybe, I'm guessing, oh, look, this is a guess really only, maybe 25 people that actually want to do what the president wants to do what's right, have the same view as this administration. And the others have been resisting. So you've got all these prosecutors who are have been prosecuting Roger Stone, and I've got a whole dossier on them. It's very interesting. If I can just figure out where this is. And I'll look for that while we listen to Griff Jenkins, because Griff kind of gives you an idea of what the problem is. The president weighed in on it on Monday when the sentencing was declared, or that was made public from the judge, Judge Berman, who's a female judge appointed by Barack Obama. So President Trump weighed in on it, saying, you know, this is ridiculous. Why is he being given such an incredible sentence? And while others who have done worse, like people in the Obama administration and others, just get away scot-free, basically that's what he said. That's not his words. But so now he's being accused of interfering with the case. And the White House and the Justice Department are saying there was no conversation between us. This President Trump is just doing what he always does. He weighs in on things. He is not calling the Justice Department and demanding they – he could do that, by the way. It wouldn't be anything wrong with it. He's over the Justice Department, but he hasn't done that according to him and the White House. Okay, so this morning we learned more stuff about this case, and Griff Jenkins actually did a pretty good report this morning. Let's listen.
And I was glad to come home to my Washington studio, but I came home to uproar over Stone sentencing, which, by the way, isn't scheduled to happen until next week. But it's drawing attention to the foreperson of Stone's trial who has come forward reportedly to a Memphis newspaper. Her name is Tamika Hart. She unsuccessfully ran for Congress in Tennessee as a Democrat, and her Twitter feed shows quite a bit of anti-Trump bias. But her social media criticism of Stone's sentencing has now been deleted. We would have to get permission from her to get it. We're working on that, but it's getting a lot of attention because she's standing for the four prosecutors who dropped from that case. Meanwhile, calls for Attorney General Barr's resignation is growing much louder. Senator Elizabeth Warren is now invoking a word that I think is going to send shockwaves through Washington. Watch.
We can't let this moment go unremarked. What the Attorney General has done, we should all be calling for the resignation of the Attorney General. If he won't resign, remember, the Attorney General can be impeached.
So let's recall, this all started from the news that Stone was initially facing 7 to 9 years under prosecutors' guidelines Monday. But after a midnight tweet by the president, Barr and his team changed course the next day, submitting paperwork requesting a lower sentence. And of course, all four prosecutors we now know on the case have resigned. Now, the DOJ says the president's tweet had absolutely nothing to do with the change, and the president is blasting the treatment of his former confidant.
The fact is that Roger Stone was treated horribly, and so were many other people. Their lives were destroyed. Roger Stone, for doing, nobody even knows what he did. Frankly, they ought to apologize to a lot of the people whose lives they've ruined.
Where this stands, a judge denied yesterday a request from Stone's defense team for a new trial. And, of course, he's going to be sentenced next week, we think. But there's always a possibility of a pardon. The president, though, isn't commenting on it. Meanwhile, Attorney General Barr has agreed to testify before the House Judiciary Committee at the end of next month. And that foreperson we mentioned at the top of the report apparently wanting to speak out, but now not wanting people to see what she was speaking out about. Brian Ainslie, Steve?
That's right.
All right, so there's a lot more. Now I want to get to as much of it as I can. Okay, I talked about the attorneys on this case who asked for 9 years, or up to 9 years. And they are part of the Mueller team. Two of them are. One of them was Aaron Zelinsky. He had worked for Rod Rosenstein in Maryland. And of course, Rosenstein was Trump's deputy attorney general. Later, he was appointed by Mueller. Later, he was the one who appointed Mueller. Then Adam Jed, who was an appellate lawyer for the Obama Justice Department, who first came to public attention in 2013, arguing that the ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. Also assigned were Jonathan Kravis, a former associate White House counsel to Obama, and Michael Morando, an assistant U.S. attorney in the D.C. office. So they got into, I guess, this is not unusual. The management, meaning, you know, Bill Barr in the Justice Department, when they saw the sentencing guidelines that was being handed down by these attorneys overseeing it, they said that they went in and intervened. They said, that's ridiculous. It's non-criminal. He doesn't have a record. This needs to be reduced. So all of these guys resigned and made public statements and made a big stink over it. So now the left, of course, is thrilled by this and claiming that the president has interfered, while the White House says the president's just weighing in on how he feels about the injustice of this. He has not called Bill Barr and demanded anything. Bill Barr was doing this with his team on his own. So I want to go back now. This Griff alluded to this, but there's so much more information. We now know, as of just a few days ago, that the person who was the foreman for the jury in the Stone trial was former Memphis City School Board President Tamika Hart. And she actually revealed on Wednesday that she was the foreperson. And soon afterward, we find out that she was a Democratic activist. She was anti-Trump. She was posting all kinds of left-wing social posts, even as the trial was going on. She posted specifically about the Stone case before she voted to convict. She retweeted an argument mocking those who considered Stone's dramatic arrest in a pre-dawn raid by a federal tactical team to be excessive force. See, she suggested President Trump and his supporters are racist and praised the investigation conducted by Mueller, which ultimately led to Stone's prosecution. Meanwhile, it emerged that U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson, again an Obama appointee, had denied a defense request to strike a potential juror who was Obama-era press official with admitted anti-Trump views and whose husband worked at the same Justice Department division that handled the probe leading to Stone's address. And another Stone juror, Seth Cousins, donated to former Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke and other progressive causes. So these are the jurors, at least some of them, including the foreman that were sitting on that trial. So they've asked for to declare a new trial, and my understanding, unless I could be wrong about this, but I think Judge Berman has said no, and she has control over all of this in spite of what the Justice Department might recommend. So there's so much more to say about Tamika Hart, and I'm not going to get to all of the things that she said, some pretty bad things, and now they've been removed, by the way. Many of them have been removed, her Facebook and Twitter accounts. That's why this article in Fox is so important, and we will put that on our Facebook page for you to share. It's Roger Stone jury foreperson's anti-Trump social media post surface after she defends DOJ prosecutors. The day that Roger Stone was convicted, she wrote, "Gotta love it." So that's the foreperson and the jury who had no opinion. How does this happen? One has to ask how that happens. But it does happen. And so I'm not sure, you know, President Trump can pardon Roger Stone, and maybe he will do that. And I'm saying, again, that doesn't mean that Roger Stone is a blameless person for everything he's ever done in his life. But in this particular case, it is overkill. By the way, he allegedly threatened a witness. That was Randy Credico. He's a talk show host in New York City. And he said he was going to go take his dog away from him. And the radio show host, Credico, said, "I never in any felt that Stone himself posed a direct physical threat to me or my dog. But that didn't matter. That's the threat that they convicted him on in part." So there you go. That's the condensed version of what's happening. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Immediately, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Socialist Bernie Sanders has emerged as the Democrat presidential frontrunner after his New Hampshire primary win. However, if you look more closely at the numbers, you'll see something encouraging. Sanders' first-place vote percentage, combined with Hiawatha Warren's fourth-place finish, total only 35% of the votes. 65% of New Hampshire Democrat primary participants voted against outright socialism. Now is the time to boldly and passionately advocate for capitalism as the economic system that has lifted the largest number of people in human history out of poverty. Some Democrats will be persuaded.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Fran Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. When the heat was the most intense, when the deep state tried to remove him from office through the Mueller investigation and through the impeachment farce, many believers in our land claimed the promise of Isaiah 54 for President Trump that no weapon forged against him would prevail. The Mueller investigation turned out to be a dry hole, and the impeachment effort was an embarrassing flop. The Democrat Party today is in utter disarray, discouraged and panicked that they are about ready to nominate a socialist. Leading Democrats are admitting they have no one who can defeat Trump in November. Truly, no weapon formed against the president has succeeded, and he has refuted every tongue that has accused him. It looks like God has heard the prayers of his people for President Trump. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A Senate vote today on a resolution designed to restrict the president's ability to protect us against Iran is the latest round in a struggle that has ebbed and flowed since the last conflict in which Congress actually declared war ended in 1945. In the interval, legislators passed a War Powers Act of dubious constitutionality that presidents of both parties have effectively ignored. So, they have periodically adopted resolutions to authorize the use of military force as a means of asserting some control over presidential war-making. Interestingly, the last of these AUMFs authorized force to be used against those responsible for the 9/11 attacks. In fact, Iran played a significant role in that act of murderous jihad, and it's still at war with us. We mustn't signal a lack of resolve to defend against Iran's oft-stated determination to bring death to America. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The prosecutors wanted 9 years. Bill Barr thinks that 2 or 3 years is more proportional. So the judge is going to decide whether or not that enhancement is appropriate, supported by the facts. Prosecutors don't sentence people. Presidents don't sentence people, Fox News commentators don't sentence people, judges do. But the notion that Bill Barr should resign is about the dumbest thing I have ever heard. If a United States senator really believes that the head of the Department of Justice cannot weigh in on what a proportional sentence is, I mean, there are child pornographers who don't get 9 years.
That was Trey Gowdy. And, yeah, so you're going to hear a lot of that today. You know, they'll harangue about this for days. Meanwhile, you know, no one can deny that I think it was a terrible injustice what they did to Paul Manafort. Not that he shouldn't have been gotten a just punishment for whatever it was he did in law breaking, but he certainly didn't deserve being in solitary confinement. And it was horrendous what they did to him. I think of Jim Baker and the PTL club, you know, many, many years ago. And I remember how they put Jim in an orange jumpsuit and put chains around his feet and legs as he walked into the courtroom. And, you know, Jim had lost his integrity and certainly his morality as the leader of that organization. But he wasn't like a dangerous criminal. But they loved doing that. They loved that. And that's what we've seen with this. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. So you're going to hear more about that. Okay, so lots of fun correspondence from you today. So let me just kind of jump into that. This is from Gary. This is from Catherine, actually. Catherine says, my husband and I just returned from watching Justice Thomas Created Equal movie after you had recommended it. It was excellent. You know what? It was. Actually, I think my husband and I are going to go again because we loved it so much. I was just talking to friends yesterday saying it's not like go see this, it's good medicine. Go see this. It's just, it could change your life. It could certainly change the life of your children, the people that disagree with you politically. It's not a propaganda movie. It's just that Justice Thomas experienced such horrible racism and was so badly treated. And yet, as a black man, he came out with a very different opinion of what his response should be. He got involved in the hard left. And was very involved, you know, bushy hair, you know, real curly. The 70s look was really involved with the left and the subversives, and then just had a reckoning, and that was kind of a spiritual awakening for him about that was the wrong way to go about. As it's really just so profound and so beautifully done, and I really hope that you will consider trying to find a theater near you. By the way, they're opening in other theaters this weekend. It's JusticeThomasMovie.com, JusticeThomasMovie.com. You know, actually, Adam, check that before you post it because I might have got a couple of words wrong there. And so anyway, I just wanted to mention that. And thanks for giving me an excuse to talk about that, Catherine, one more time. All right, this is from Emmanuel. And Emmanuel said, he's reporting to me something I didn't know. He said, Democrats have sent two articles of impeachment for Joe Biden to South Carolina for consideration. Number one, abuse of Iowa. Number two, obstruction of New Hampshire. I think that's really good, Emmanuel. I think that's really good. I do. I want to laugh. So thank you for that. Okay, so one more time, in case you guys were sleeping. The Democrats have sent two articles of impeachment for Joe Biden to South Carolina for consideration. Number one, abuse of Iowa. Number two, obstruction of New Hampshire. And that is kind of how silly it's getting, isn't it? So there you go. And this is from Patrick. Patrick writes a nice, he said, I'm a shift worker. He said, I get home about 6 a.m., clean up after my dog, feed her and listen to you. And then when you go off the air, we go to bed. I love the true news and sound bites you give. And I tell everyone about AFR radio and urge everyone to listen to local 88.5 radio. The pastor's messages have made my faith stronger and have helped me to study my Bible again. Could I just interject? I love listening to the teaching on AFA Talk too, especially Sunday mornings is when I get to really tune in because I'm not doing a show. And I love the pastors. I love the preaching. And of course, Dr. Jeffers is on in the mornings before I am and others, but honestly, he's right. And it would be so helpful, such a great balance to the political talk that I do. Is to really get in the Word and be taught and challenged. And that's what Patrick is describing. He said, the pastor's messages have made my faith stronger and have helped me to study my Bible again. I play the station in my car, and I'm in two carpools. He said, one is a Christian, sort of. One is an agnostic. And they've had to listen for the past 4 years. So a shout out to you guys. I hope you're not embarrassed now that you wrote this, Patrick, if you're riding in the car. But That's very cool. You know, it's like Jesus, the Bible, the Old Testament says, come, let us reason together. Thus saith the Lord. Let's talk about it. Come, let us reason together. And that's what we try to do every morning. So anyway, one last thing. He said, Patrick says, I listen to Pastor Jeffress. A lot of time I feel like, man, I'm barely going to be able to sit outside the gates of heaven. He says a few things about how his own spiritual inadequacies. And I just wanted to say, Patrick, that phrase alone tells me a lot about you. And remember that God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And you certainly are a humble man before him. God has a lot of grace and mercy for a man like you. Some people look really good and say all the right things, but privately they're not that, and they do have maybe some source of pride. That's a tendency. That's another kind of sin. But God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So I thank you for listening, Patrick. I'm honored that you do. This is this is from Jerry. He says, America is... Oh, he said he wanted to take exception with something I said yesterday. I believe I predicted that, well, I said that I think Mayor Pete Buttigieg would be a real powerful candidate against Donald Trump because he's very cunning, and he's so low-key, I think he might frustrate President Trump. I think he would be a formidable candidate. But Jerry disagrees. He says that America, I think there's zero chance of him winning. America is still about 74% Christian, and even most Democratic Christians would not vote for a gay man for president. Yet there are some Christians that go against what the Bible says on homosexuality, but not enough to give him a win. Jerry, I don't know. I don't know where you live and what you're surrounded by, but I just, I see the world changing. And they tell us that we're part of the past, you know. How did Barack Obama put that? History will not remember you kindly or something, or get with history or whatever. As though morality could change, as though God should suddenly decide that there is no really, he didn't mean it, there really were no male and female persons, there really was no marriage, I didn't really mean that, this is the new way, we're going to erase all those barriers, come on, get with the program. But still, you know what, people are getting with the program, Jerry, so I don't know. I hope you're right, but I'm not sure. This is from Dwight. He sent some beautiful things, but I want to read this part. He said, by the way, Theodore Roosevelt said, a thorough knowledge of the Bible is worth more than a college education. Noah Webster said, education is useless without the Bible. And then Thomas Jefferson, of course, said, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. Excellent stuff, Dwight. And of course, he said a lot more. But, you know, remember that Abraham Lincoln, in his early years, all he had was the Bible. He had it practically memorized. He knew it inside and out. And he wasn't a committed Christian until his son, I think it was Tad or Willie, I'm not sure which son, died in the White House. It was the second son. And he went through such a deep, dark depression. And a pastor who was his pastor then describes his conversion. Certainly he knew the Bible, but he applied it to his, he had tons of wisdom. That was the thing that educated him. It was the foundation for everything. And he was arguably our most incredible president. That's my personal opinion. I always love the Lincoln Memorial in D.C. is my favorite for all those reasons. It's just there's something about that place and the words inscribed of Abraham Lincoln on the walls that just move me every single time. This is from James. James is always writing. James used to listen to me in Chicago, but he's not a fan anymore, even though he listens. James, I wish we could talk. You should call me sometime. James doesn't like what I say. And so he's commenting on something. I talked about the president at the prayer breakfast. Did I talk about that Monday, I think? By the way, I want to interject something. Sometimes I'm gone. Most of the time when I'm off the air, I am in meetings or doing official business elsewhere or at an event elsewhere, but still doing official business. But Tuesday, I was gone for a different purpose, and I just want to say one of my very dear, dear, dear friends in Chicago is in real health crisis, and I wanted to see him and his wife. I wanted us to talk and be together, and so I just did a day trip. It took me 22 hours, 22 hours to get there and back, or maybe it was 24, I don't know, but it was just a lack 30 minutes being 24 hours. But I had the most wonderful day. You know, we reminisced and we laughed and we talked about Jesus and what it was like to enter eternity. And we had some very private, beautiful moments and it was wonderful. And so that's where I was Tuesday. So I just wanted you to know that. And if you could pray with me for Val, I would appreciate that you would pray that God give him courage and make him well. If that's possible at this point in his life to bring, make his heart whole, but to most of all, help him not to be afraid and have peace about this next step of his life. And so that's where I was. Okay, so James writes me, also a Chicago connection. James, he said, Trump neither wants to love his enemies or spare them his revenge. Is this the moral exemplar that you want? Personally and privately, no, James, it isn't. I tried to be clear about that on Monday, but maybe I wasn't. Let me just say to you that God's personal instruction to us is that we do love our enemies and do good to those that hurt. Do good to those that hurt us. It does not say that we, you know, allow them to shoot and rape our children in our presence, and we give them loving hugs. Now that's an extreme statement, but I'm just telling you, wisdom dictates, because there are other scripture passages that dictate a wisdom in those situations. But James, so in that regard, I think President Trump, I'm not around him enough to make a final assessment. We hear sound bites of his conversations a lot. I did not sense in his talk at the prayer breakfast that he was lashing out at enemies. He was speaking the truth, just like Jesus did when he said, I don't like people that use God as an excuse for doing something that they know is wrong. What's wrong with that? I don't think that's vengeance. I've not got a problem with that. But I also want to say that in the broader sense, a leader of a nation has to conduct himself in a way, the pattern is Romans 13, if you want to look that up. And that is that the powers that, and authorities that God has set in place, whether they're his friends or whether they know it or not, are there to establish order. And they are there to punish enemies of the people. That's not a Marxist phrase. It is, but I didn't mean it that way. Enemies of the population, people that kill and steal and prey upon the innocent. They have to be disciplined, and there has to be punishment. And so that's what he's in a different category than you and me in that regard. And it is a separate track than your personal love of your enemies. I don't know if that'll satisfy you, James. It probably won't, but that's the truth. All right. Now, this is a comment from Carl. He said, Trump will need a very large margin to overcome all the cheating and ballot stuffing that the Democrats are planning, and will surely get away with. So to all you Republicans, conservatives, and Christians, go vote in the November election. Every vote will be more important than in previous elections. He's right that it's going to be so close, as it always was, and they will move heaven and earth. Look at Iowa. The monkey business is just unbelievable. And as the country transforms by the enormous amount of immigrants, illegal and legal, who have come in, who have been, the floodgates have been opened, and their policies, a lot of them come from socialist countries, and so they have a different view. They don't have history of the history of the United States. They don't necessarily, their parents did not serve in world wars, their grandparents. They are disconnected. A lot of them are here for economic reasons. And so it's changing the whole, and of course, the whole message of racism, which the left is very successfully, preaching daily, moment by moment, on the airwaves and through the media, is finding resonance with our kids. So we have a precarious situation where people who actually remember what the country's like and want it to be, who kind of line up with the president's vision for this country, are pitted against their children, their grandchildren, and many, many other people. Now, you know that because you listen to this show, that lots of immigrants love, love, love this country, and they make the best citizens. So don't mistake my conversation or my statement to mean all of them. It doesn't mean that. There's so much more that I wanted to get to. I want to do a shout out to Janet. She's in Shawnee, Oklahoma. I've known her for a long time, and she's really concerned about her church there in Shawnee. And she asks that those of you in Oklahoma need to know about SameGodsShawnee.com. SameGodsShawnee.com. It's a conference that's going to be taking place that says that Allah and Jehovah are the same God, and she's very upset about it. So some of you in Oklahoma might want to get together and do something about that. SameGodsShawnee.com. Okay, now, how did I do getting in all that? Do I get a gold star? I hope so. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.